Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am quite pleased to be joined today by Steve Gladstone, AKC judge, member of the American Kennel Club Board of Directors, and a breeder of Cardigan Welsh Corgis. Thank you, Steve, for joining us.
And now I've married into Smooth Fox Terriers.
There you go. It's a great way to... I inherited pugs that way. So, Steve, tell us about what got you started in dogs.
Well, I first went to a dog show and became enchanted, actually, by a bull terrier. And went back. Ultimately, when I met Marie Ann, we decided we wanted to be dog show breeders.
Very cool.
She already had some Norwegian Elk Hounds, and we made a common list of breeds that we were interested in, and Cardigan Corgis were on both lists.
There you go. It's a win.
We went out and found a Cardigan Corgi in 1973.
Wow.
And been hooked ever since.
You've been pretty successful.
We had our fair share of wins. We bred some nice dogs over the years, and I started judging fairly early on, and I've always enjoyed it.
And you guys participated in herding and obedience as well as just confirmation?
Well, we did some obedience work. I put a CDX on one dog.
Very cool.
Marie Ann put UDs back before there were champions in obedience on some Cardigans. And we've always enjoyed our dogs.
Yeah.
Played with them in lots of different venues.
Excellent. And so as a breeder, so we're going to start with as a breeder.
Sure.
Okay. As a breeder, what are you looking for when you're developing? You just mentioned earlier you're planning a new breeding. So what's your planning process?
Well, more than anything, I want to develop consistency. The whole benefit of a purebred dog is that you know what you're getting. So I want to develop dogs that you know what you're getting. We recently bred a Cardigan litter. It's a story that I'll tell you. I went out to judge in Albuquerque, New Mexico a few years ago, and 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, a gentleman who I had absolutely no idea who he was put a six-month-old puppy, bitch, Blue Merle, on the table, and I took one look at her, and I said, oh, you're coming home with me. And she did.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was the first Cardigan that I had taken in since Marie Ann died. And we hit it off real well. So she came home with me. She reminded me of lots of the lines that we had bred over the years.
Right.
And indeed, when we went back a few generations, she went straight back to our breeding. So,
oh, that is so cool.
You see consistency.
Right.
That's really what it's all about. And then I had the pleasure and fortune to judge the Cardigan National a couple of years ago. And I found a best of breed dog that I just absolutely thought was beautiful. And I bred my bitch to him, and we have some pups that we're real proud of. They've done very well. And again, consistency. You know what you're going to get because you know what you have.
Right. And so temperament, or what's kind of like your big bugaboo?
Temperament is primary of everything. If you don't have a dog with a solid, sound temperament, you don't have a dog that can do its true job, which is to be with its people. Unfortunately, I see fairly regularly lots of dogs presented to me in the ring that are just inappropriately shy for the breed. Now, I recognize there are some breeds that are not expected to be Cocker Spaniels.
Right.
But regardless, no dog should be so shy that it can't be approached. And it's sad to me when people have dogs in the ring that are simply unapproachable. I've gotten to the point where I will not reward them.
So. Good. I mean, one of the things I always think, these dogs, when they're done being show dogs or they're done being whatever, they're still somebody's pet.
Absolutely.
And they have to be able to live in society.
Absolutely. So temperament is absolutely essential. And In almost every breed, front ends are a challenge. It's just unbelievable how many different ways front ends can be wrong. And not every breed has the same front end, but every breed has a significant population of poor front ends for its breed. And that's also a big problem. And people really have to learn how to make selection for breeding based on the things that are important to each particular breed.
Right.
So,
right. No, that's good. And I think that fronts is always the most difficult to fix, the easiest to lose and the most difficult to fix.
Absolutely. And I suppose most would accuse me of probably being a movement judge. I rarely look at dogs standing still.
Mm-hmm.
I don't line dogs up and stare at them.
I just ran around your ring six times today.
I think that in almost every breed, you can see when they're moving what the structure puts together. And to me, it's all about when it's moving. My story on that is the very first Doberman assignment that I ever did was a Quaker State specialty. And I think I had 50 or 60 Dobermans.
Wow.
And all my friends said, you know, those Doberman handlers, they're artists. They're just going to sell you a dog. And I realized very quickly, that may be true, but then they have to take a step. And that front end falls apart, and the top line bounces, and the rear end isn't balanced with the front end, and they sidewind, and all of a sudden, it's not so hard. So, quite honestly, to me, judging dogs is relatively easy. I like to say, you know, I'm just not bright enough to know what I'm supposed to do, and I can't remember whose turn it is. So it really is so much easier to just point at what I like.
Judge the dogs?
And, you know, that's the concept. I will say that I learned a lot from the late Annie Clark. One of the most important things she taught me, you can stare at them all day long. All they're going to do is get older.
That's Annie.
So, and, you know, it's very true. The first impressions in the dog show ring are tremendously important to those exhibitors who are fairly new. They really need to understand, in 2 minutes a dog or a minute and a half a dog, first impressions are tremendously important. The first time the class of four or five goes around the ring, I've got a pretty good idea of either who's winning it or who's not getting the ribbon out of five.
Right.
Sometimes it changes, but more times than not, I've got a pretty good idea of how it's going to go at the end of that class.
Excellent. So you mentioned Annie Clark. Who else? Who were some of your other early mentors?
Well, we learned an awful lot from Roy Ayers. He was a collie man, an all-rounder, and he took a shine to our Cardigans when we first started showing. When we first started in Cardigans, Blue Merles were unheard of. And we started showing Blue Merles, and there were only a few judges who would even look at them. So Marie Moore was one, Roy Ayers. Some were notorious for absolutely refusing to look at them. I won't mention any names. But it was a challenge back then to show Blue Merle Cardigan Corgis.
And you see them more now. And
now we are blessed with some really good quality corgis of all colors now. My breed has come a long way.
So let's talk about breeding not for color.
Well, it's a hard thing to talk about in Cardigan Corgis because we have a very strict code of ethics that allows us to only breed Blue Merles to black dogs.
Excellent.
Can't breed Blue Merles to the Brindles, can't breed Blue Merles to another Blue Merle. So in Cardigan Corgis, you do have to breed for color.
Okay.
Or at least you're restricted by what you can breed based on color.
Right.
In almost any breed, I think trying to breed for a particular color is probably losing sight of the big picture. Breed for temperament, breed for health, breed for structure, breed for type of what that animal is really supposed to look like. And if it's an acceptable color, that'll come along. You know, to me, I ought to be able to stand 100 yards away from the end of a football field. And perhaps with the exception of the greyhound and the whippet, maybe, I really ought to know what breed I'm looking at from the silhouette. And when a car goes zipping past at 70 miles an hour on the freeway and somebody's pet has their head hanging out the window and all you see is that head, you really ought to know what breed that is.
Right.
And you know, that's really a lot of what the mystery of type is. A headpiece tells you what breed it is. A silhouette tells you what breed it is. Right. Because it's the shape and make that makes what it is you're looking for.
Right. If you confuse a field spaniel for a Springer spaniel, somebody's got a problem.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Okay, very good. Okay, so now we're going to put on the judge's hat.
Okay.
Keep moving. We got lots of good stuff to share with people. So as a judge, you've been judging since...
Oh, my.
Eight?
In the late 80s.
I think probably close to
30 years now. Mm-hmm. Keep getting grayer. Worst thing about our sport is the pictures that start when I was 20 years
old. Those flashback pictures? Just please, stop. So do you see improvement? Do you see not improvement in the breeds that you judge?
I do see. I see basically improvement in most of the breeds that I judge. Now, to some extent, that's because there was a lot of room for improvement to be had. In my breed, for example, my breed's come a long way in 25 years. We are regularly competitive now.
Right.
And when we first started showing Cardigans, of course, that was back when there was a working group of 40 breeds.
Yes.
And it was a challenge to just get a judge to walk down to the end of the line.
It's a long line.
It's a long line. But the quality in my breed has certainly improved significantly. Mm-hmm. We've been lucky to have some truly good, dedicated breeders that have really advanced the breed. And you know, that's really what it takes. It takes a core of dedicated breeders who are willing to look at their stock and, most importantly, look at their competitor's stock and say, you know, I got beat by a dog today that deserved to beat me, and maybe I should try and do some breeding that'll move me towards that.
Yes.
And people need to be able to recognize that they need to see what dog is in front of them in line, and maybe there's some reasons for it.
Yeah, that's excellent. And so exhibitors who come to your ring, do you have big do's and don'ts?
Absolutely not. I have almost no rules in my ring. If you want to change
handlers... No rules, just right? Is that...
If you want to change handlers, I don't care. It makes no difference to me. You know, the only thing I ask you to do is recognize that I'm standing there. I probably have 175 dogs to do today. And all I really ask is that you be close to ready. I certainly understand when a breeder or an exhibitor brings three or four dogs and needs time to switch armbands. Of course, take all the time you need. But please don't be standing in the back of the corner gabbing away while the steward is calling number 17. I need you in the ring when we need you in the ring.
That's good. And so one of the things that has been kind of a hot topic recently, and I know you've discussed it and written about it pretty extensively, AKC recently changed how they approve judges.
Yes.
And so let's talk a little bit about that, what you see as the pros, the cons, the ideas for going forward, AKC is going, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm probably more responsible for the creation of this new, as they call it, judging approvals process than anyone else. I worked hard on the board of directors to put together a system that could get, first of all, quite frankly, 7 votes. That's what politics in the boardroom is all about.
Yeah.
But in terms of substance, it's my opinion that we did a great disservice to the sport over the last 25 years by really disenfranchising a huge number of our people, of our judges, and of our breeders, by making a system that was so exclusionary and just so intimidating that many, many good qualified people just refused to even start to judge or to continue to judge.
Right.
And so we ended up with a very few number of multiple group available judges, with dog shows where the sizes are shrinking and the costs are increasing, and our club simply couldn't afford to keep having to bring in an extra 2, 3, or 4 judges because no one was able to fill up the whole group requirements. And I strongly believe that we should have many, many more multi-group judges, or even all-rounders, in order to give exhibitors and show chairmen a choice.
Mm-hmm.
The basic tenet is that I don't believe anyone gets up in the morning and says, I don't really care if I do a good job in Great Danes today or not. I honestly believe that no one wants to be made a fool of. It's not to say that it doesn't happen, but nobody wants it. But the point is, it seems to me that the only ones who really get to vote are the exhibitors and the show chairman. And quite honestly, it has always been my opinion that an AKC employee should never have anything to say about the quality of the dog that I chose. I was taught by the field reps exceptionally well on how to judge 175 dogs in a day, on the procedure of judging dogs, on the rules of judging dogs, and more frequently, more currently, on the importance of making sure that the exhibitors are treated right and are basically having a good time. We know that everybody's going to lose except one at the end of the day.
Right.
But it's more and more important for our judges to understand that they're there to evaluate the dogs, but to treat the people the right way. And that's something the AKC reps have been wonderful with. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that I should be held accountable to an AKC employee on which Doberman I felt was the best one that day. And I never have. So I believe that if we let people have the opportunity to judge, then the customer, the show chairman who hires, and the exhibitor who enters are the ones who get to decide by whether they enter or not. And I'm not very sympathetic to those who say, oh, but the handlers will just enter right down the line. It doesn't matter who they are. I said, well, then they get what they deserve. If there's no discretion, then there's no right to complain. I believe that people want to do a good job judging. I also believe that what we really need to do in terms of judging approval is attempt to identify those who really have what we call an eye for a dog. And once we do, let them go. You know, our system for 25 years, it took longer to get a group license than to get an MD. It took me longer to be approved and almost as much money to cost to be judged, to be approved for the herding group, my first group, as it was for me to get a JD from University of Pennsylvania. I mean, there's something wrong with the balancing there, and that's how I've always felt.
Right.
So this new system really encourages people to come and try. And the fact is, as soon as we started, we had hundreds of applications. And what that said to me was that there was a huge backlog that was created by the artificial restraints that we had on the old system. And, you know, I know there are those who are vehemently opposed to what we're doing now.
What would be your, I guess, your response to the folks who say we're creating a generation of people that aren't sufficiently prepared?
Well, first of all, I believe the way you get prepared is by judging. You can go to seminars all day long, and you can put your hands on dogs and talk about dogs all day long. But until you get in the ring and have to make decisions on which one and how to make the balances of how you balance the Doberman with the beautiful head, but, you know, the straight shoulder, or what you do with the German Shepherd that's absolutely gorgeous but has yellow eyes staring at you, and how do you balance that? Those are when you learn to judge breeds of dogs, and you don't learn until you do it. And I think that we are preparing people. There are those who are, I'm not going to say abusing the system, but who are certainly accelerating a lot faster than any of us expected. And that might get addressed. You know, there are things that have to be addressed, and that's the maturation of any system.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to my way of thinking, the most vocal opponents to this current system is basically the current multi-group judges and the judges' organizations that represent them. And the reason for that is real simple in my mind. It's all economics. If you have 100 all-rounders, then any two all-rounders sure as heck can't be charging fees and making money and getting all the assignments. I think there's a huge amount of economics involved in all of this.
Valid point.
I also believe that our old system was very economic driven. It in effect kept the number of multi-group judges and all-rounders to a minimum, so that they were able to have all the assignments because everybody needed multi-group judges on their panels. As a delegate who's never charged a fee to judge a dog, I'm really not very sympathetic about the need for a dog show judge to be able to charge high fees. And it's a huge cost for our clubs. So our exhibitors want more choices. They don't want to see me judging every 30 days in the same area. So they want more choices, and that's an important factor.
Mm-hmm.
Our show chairmen want more choices because with a lot more choices, you have the opportunity to invite people to come and judge and perhaps save money on fees that people are willing to judge without charging large fees if supply and demand. So there's a lot of economics involved in all of this. Mm-hmm. So I don't blame the currently established multi-group judges or the newly created all-rounders in being highly suspect of the system that we've put in place, because it is designed to create a lot more opportunity of choice by creating more numbers. And we desperately need, in my opinion, for the betterment of our breeds. Who wants my opinion of which Doberman is right every 30 days all around the country? I just don't think that that's the right way for us to be determining this idea of which dog should be bred, or that this is for breeding stock. We need more opinions. That's, to me, the basis of it.
Right.
So, and I don't believe that we've taken any availability of education away. Mm-hmm. We have lots of opportunities, but the big problem that we have to solve in the AKC boardroom is, how do you make the same criteria for a breed, I'll pick on my favorite, Chinooks, as opposed to, again, I'll go back to Dobermans.
Mm-hmm.
How do we decide when to allow someone to judge Chinooks if they have no opportunity for education, but we want to allow them into the stud book and put them in the dog show ring?
Yeah.
But then do I really want to tell all of my judges that, well, you can't judge the group until you do Chinooks also, but you can't get Chinooks because there's no education out there? So that's a real catch-22. So the biggest challenge that we have is determining how to balance the requirements of allowing someone to judge what we call a low-entry breed as compared to what I'll call a high-entry breed. Is it appropriate to have the same demands? There are those who say the judge should have the same absolute expertise and education in a Skye Terrier as in a Doberman before we let them do them. But the problem is you don't have the numbers. So one of the answers is to say, well, if you believe that, breed more Skye Terriers and have more of them shown.
Right.
But the real world is we can't have the same demands and still have a system that has judges that can judge the entire group with some experience. So ultimately, you learn Skye Terriers like everything else by doing it and by judging them. So,
okay. All right. Well, Steve, thank you so very much. I know you've had a long week.
It's and my
you
pleasure.
Have great
always,
to
always
see
great
you.
To participate in things that will help to get the word out about what's important in the dog show world. And, you know, to me, what's the most important in the dog show world is the great people that I've met and have called my friends all around the world. My wife Jan and I are just as fortunate as can be. We travel the world doing what we love, visiting with people that love the same things we do. It's a great sport. We all know how addicting it is.
Yes.
But, you know, what I do sometimes when I withhold a ribbon from somebody, and, you know, I'll remember one. I'll tell you one more story.
All right.
I remember walking into a barn in Oklahoma in the early days of judging. Woman walks in with the worst dachshund I've ever seen in my life. And I couldn't give it a ribbon. So I said to her, you know, miss, I just can't. But, you know, showing dogs is a wonderful family sport, and you'll have a lot of fun. But it's a lot more fun if you have one you can win with. So go talk to the people, blah, blah, blah. 5 years later, walk into the same barn in Oklahoma. The woman walks in with a dachshund. I knew her instantly. Walked in with a beautiful dog, gave it best of winners. She tells me as we're taking the picture, I had to come back. I had to thank you and show you. This is my third generation champion. So it makes it worthwhile.
Bravo.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Steve,
for your hard work in bringing the word out.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.